Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And welcome to the AEW Dynamite review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another one of Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Oh! Pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete, a really good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick in Philadelphia, here to review last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. I don't know how to feel about this. I don't know whether I was just...
I felt nothing.
I don't know whether I was just grumpy because we've been travelling all day or what have you, or it was just a strange experience of watching it actually live or whatever. I thought I was going to feel a lot more for this show, and I ended up feeling a little bit disappointed by what we watched.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't very good at all. There was some good stuff on the show, that always is, even on like the really bad Dynamites with that roster. It's virtually impossible to produce 2 hours of really, really bad television. But yeah, I was the same with you. I was knackered, very turbulent flight, a long, long time in customs, and then it was pissing down with rain. So I was just like, and when I go to a new place as well, I just want to settle out, having the full day afterwards. So I was not really in the best mood for it, but then I was on Twitter afterwards, and it was just, I think it was received as just a not very good show. And what's annoying is that what was good on it was so weirdly repetitive. Not weirdly repetitive, there was a reason, I think, for two of the similar segments.
Yeah.
And then it just got incredibly repetitive, and then baffling. And then like the way the crowd was lit, it was just odd. It was like there was a, you know, when you've got like an old television and it breaks and they have these weird quirks of the picture quality, it felt like there was just like a really big black bar at the top of the screen and then a corner, and it was just, you know, there was just that few people in such a big arena yet again.
Let's get into it then, because it's probably easiest to break this show down, because it was, like you say, you could see the intentions behind elements of it. And I suppose the first thing was effectively a response to the CM Punk stuff recently, of course. Adam Copeland comes out and he's saying, you know, screw negativity. This is a great time to be a pro wrestling fan, you know. Whether you're loving it or hating it, you're a fan regardless. But, you know, try and be positive, effectively. We should all be positive. And he put over the AEW roster. He ran through a whole list of names of people who he could and hopefully will work with, and all the dream matches and first-time matches that we could get there. He says, this is the most fun he's ever had in his pro wrestling career. He says, you know, AEW is here and it makes pro wrestling better, and it has been. And he put over, you know, the original people who started the company, including Cody Rhodes, Tony Khan, Young Bucks, all the EVPs, Omega, of course. But yeah, he says, AEW makes pro wrestling better and it's where the best wrestle. And this is when he brings out Will Ospreay in his own, in his own words. But before we get to that, your reaction to this, rah-rah speech, basically.
Yeah, it was completely lame and utterly pointless. But just to make sure, don't put in the newspaper that Tony Khan was mad. Tony Khan wasn't mad at CM Punk's comments on the Ariel Helwani MMA Hour. This is just so lame, so unbelievably lame. Like, I don't doubt that Adam Copeland, getting to work with his lifelong best friend and partner and career rival, is having a grand old time in AEW. But the irony of this rah-rah speech was that, if anything, it proved CM Punk's comments correct. What did this do? What did this build interest in? You got lots of hours of television a week, but you could argue that AEW doesn't really spend enough doing the hard sell, the promotion, building interest. I don't want to, you know, make it seem as if, well, they've had one bad week, the power's gone after a great run of form. It was a bad episode of television. It was half and half. But this is just, this served no purpose whatsoever. It felt desperate. It felt self-conscious. They've been doing such a good job of showing lately that I don't know why they felt the need to tell me and insist. It was just so unbelievably lame. And it didn't really sell tickets. It didn't build interest in a program. I thought this was so monumentally unnecessary. And who are you talking to?
Yes.
If people are tuning in, they probably really like the show. The, what, circa 3,000 in the building want to have a good time. They want to be shown a good time, not told. It just felt like gotten to nonsense that, if anything, proved CM Punk's point, because what was this? I mean, it served no purpose whatsoever.
Also, where did he get the TNT Championship from? He didn't come out with it. He was there, and then just as Ospreay comes out, he's got it over his shoulder.
It was so bizarre, because he come out and said, I don't have the TNT Championship because I'm speaking to you as Adam, as opposed to Adam Copeland.
I don't know.
I just had crap. Utter crap. Didn't need to hear it. They didn't need to say it. And it just makes them look perpetually gotten to.
Nice moment between him and Ospreay, though. With a, you know, view potentially to a match further down the line. But yeah, the show itself was, on the one hand, clever in terms of, you know, we've talked previously over the last few weeks about the way they've been mirroring Ospreay and Danielson. And then, anyway, we'll get to it. Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, Battle of Wills, you know, Don Callis family, of course. And it was it was the story of Powerhouse Hobbs as a power wrestler. He's a powerhouse. He was utilising his power game against Will Ospreay. And Will Ospreay's just, I mean, phenomenal, obviously. And using his speed, high-flying ability, etc. to counter that. And then Hobbs just decided to slam him into the stairs. He picked him up off the, because Ospreay was going for some sort of springboard move on the outside, off the barricade. And Hobbs just picked him up, slammed him into the stairs, hoied him over to the commentary table. Ospreay comes back with a springboard flying forearm and then thought it was a good idea to slap Powerhouse Hobbs.
Nope.
Spoiler alert, it wasn't. Hobbs battered him for a while there. Then missed a frog splash. Ospreay went for the Ozcutter, managed to hit on the second attempt. Got a near fall out of that, but then there was a huge lariat that turned Ospreay inside out. He also hit an avalanche power slam for a near fall, but in the end, Ospreay knocks Hobbs down into position for the hidden blade, nails it, 1-2-3. Bit rough ending in terms of Ospreay came off the top and looked like he almost landed knee first on Hobbs's head, and then the first shot we saw of the hidden blade didn't look pretty, and then the second angle actually really looked quite good.
Yes.
Afterwards, Don Callis comes in, because they're all Don Callis family, of course, and Hobbs, pissed off, storms off. Will Ospreay is the story we're about to get into with Danielson, because he immediately came out and he had that moment on the ramp. Ospreay shows, I can beat a big guy, just like you, Danielson.
Yeah, so that's the story of the first, third of the show, to prove that, again, as you said, to mirror one another. They've each defeated Katori Shibata last week, and now they each faced Hoss wrestlers and defeated Hoss wrestlers in order to again put in the mind of the fans that these two men are at the exact same level. A level of parity exists between them. They are inseparable, and the idea is they are slowly conditioning the audience to make the match a dynasty, that little dynasty, that little bit less predictable, even though for me, I mean, Ospreay's winning and that is the result. What's annoying about this, it's like, it's one of my least favourite booking tropes. It's like, if I can beat a big man, you can beat a big man too. It's like when someone beats, it's like when Sami Zayn was working Bronson Reed over on Raw, it's like, well, that might be Gunther because I'm beating a guy your size.
Yeah.
Like, I'm at 8 years old.
Yeah.
Is that how the thought process works? So that was a bit irritating. Obviously, the nature of the story told, maybe you should have had Danielson Archer on Collision, so you're not watching consecutive
matches
with an exact same, different approaches to how this match was done, but the same David and Goliath story. So I just thought this was probably one of those ideas that was better written down.
And I said to you watch, who are watching this, they've got this the wrong way round. They should have had the Danielson Archer match first and Ospreay, especially because of the way that the Danielson match was structured, just to get ahead of ourselves. It was a slower pace.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously with Ospreay, it's like big move from Hobbs, and in the end, Ospreay just comes back with that ridiculously fast offense.
Yeah. In and of itself, I thought the content of this match was very, very good. Not great, and that's the weird sort of ceiling that Ospreay has imposed upon himself. If it's not this blow away great match,
yes,
it's almost, it stands out as being, oh, this is really good, this is really fun.
Plus, I get what's happening. I mean, I have no complaints from watching Ospreay fight Hobbs and Takeshita and obviously Carl Fletcher as well. But I'm like, what's going on here? Why is he fighting everyone in the Don Callis family? And why isn't he broken away from this group, which is clearly not aligned with how he's being perceived by the audience?
Or how he's presenting himself.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's odd. It's one of those where I like the Pip and Jordan analogy they used to build slash justify almost the first match with Takeshita. But as you say, the longer this goes on, it's like, well, what are you doing this for? Like, if you're Don Callis, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You're meant to be this master, evil mastermind. And now you're basically unsettling each member of your roster by unfavorably comparing them to Will Ospreay. Mm. It's just stupid. It's pretty stupid at this point. As I said, it worked once on a very tentative, okay, look at the end. Look, the ends justify the means.
Mm.
But no, I thought Powerhouse Hobbs has got certain moves in his arsenal where, like, when he's that clothesline to the back of the head, when he's just plucking Ospreay out of thin air. He was dynamic enough to sell for Ospreay's best stuff and to move for Ospreay's best stuff, but clever enough not to sell too much for it. So I think for the story they told, they did the best possible job of it. There was an obvious ceiling on the drama through the size of the crowd, the atmosphere, and the fact that the result was stunningly predictable. But I thought by the end, the fans really got into it. It was the first of two matches, right, including Archer Danielson, that I think, move for move, could have been much more well received. I think the general consensus, and the fair, for me anyway, description of these two matches is really good, good, really good, not blow away great.
Yeah.
I think you could do these both matches move for move, and if Hobbs and Archer still had that true aura that they once possessed, it would have been a different story.
It's exactly what you said, didn't you, when we were like, oh, cool, Danielson, Archer. I don't know when this got announced, but I feel like we missed it with all of our travels.
In terms
of, we knew about the Ospreay-Hobbs stuff and some of the other bits of this show. But, oh, cool, Danielson, Archer, which on paper is fun. And, you know, in the ring was enjoyable. But like the first thing you said to me is like, because I was like, oh, Archer's only lost across his entire AEW career in that little bit I saw at the bottom, like 15 singles matches, which isn't that many across the amount of time he spent. I know he's been injured and what have you, but it's not that much. But you still said, yeah, but he's not, oh God, Lance Archer, how do you beat him?
Yeah, I mean, it has been that in like literally years at this point. He's been less, I think he's so talented. But again, he is a territory heel in an episodic TV world.
You're right, yeah.
And he's got no other territories to get reheated from. So he just comes in, does a job, and then leaves. Mm. And it just doesn't really work. It can't.
Yeah, he ran Danielson over to start this match, dominated him in the early stages. Danielson had to get him back with dragon screws and cut him down, basically. And then they go to the outside. Danielson tries a big dive and gets slammed by Archer, who then, my notes here say, Archer slams some bloke on Brian on the outside.
Can I have a quick note on this? This worked in New Japan when there are young lions around ringside is like a matter of course. They have to invent guys for Lance Archer to throw onto his opponent, and it just looks contrived.
Yeah, there used to be like a guy in the entrance who just so happened to be wearing an AEW t-shirt, and they're like,
that, I can believe people are milling around there.
Yeah, you're going to throw him across the
stage. I can believe that people are milling around backstage, like production staff, whoever, and he's just in his mood, wanting to show his dominance, grab one of them and chin them, kicking his way to the ring, is how it's described once. When it's just like, you're not there half the time. It's just contrived. And the whole point is, that bit worked so well because it was like, doesn't matter who's around, I'll beat the crap out of them. And it was like this chaos, like this disruption of a normal scene, but this is just a contrived, that's crap.
That's a, looks like a local indie talent wearing black t-shirt, black trousers.
Yeah.
It reminded me a bit of the bit we were joking about over breakfast today, of that one match they had between Nick Comoroto and Dustin Rhodes, and they went, yeah, obviously the ring, you've got tables, you've got
kendo sticks, steel chairs,
and obviously the single wooden chair that we always carry around.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go to a break, come back, Archer's still in control, he goes for that rope walk of his, gets crotched, there's some jumping kicks from Danielson in the corner, he gets Archer down, gets him in the lapel lock, but Lance Archer makes it to the ropes, he comes back with a big choke slam, or choke bomb basically, but in the end, of course, as we anticipated, Danielson with the kicks, and the Bucaiku knee gets the 1-2-3.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Not great. And as I said before, if this was move for move, like literally move for move wrestled against a guy who had the Archer aura of old, like move for move, this would have been like pretty fantastic. But the fans have simply stopped believing in Archer time and time again. He's probably been sort of past his peak as a monster in AEW for far longer than he ever had it. And again, it's just these types of wrestlers do not work on episodic television unless you are going to push them consistently at the top. And they just don't do that with Archer. So it's just really hard to take him seriously.
And he's not going
to
get beat before he fights Ospreay Dynasty.
It's just added to the malaise of, right, I know what's happening here. Yeah. And it's good, but I know what's happening. There's not this like angle-driven episodic quality to this episode of Dynamite, which lacked in energy as well. Danielson's a genius. And as I said, move for move, this would have worked. One example, right? Archer is this monster who you have to just basically be on like a rash. Otherwise, if he catches you, he kills you. So Danielson gets him in a label lock. Archer breaks it, rolls out the ring. So Danielson's like, right, I'll do a running knee off the apron. So it's like everything he did was linked together really well. Is this sort of urgent, I have to just keep doing it strategy. But I've just felt very little for it. And I did think the pacing in and of itself, again, people would be happier to just sit back and watch Archer destroy Danielson. But they're not when they don't believe in him.
I was going to say, speaking of things you felt nothing for, Chris Jericho came out.
Yes, he sure did.
We were already confused by, what do you mean Chris Jericho calls out Hook? Have we not done this?
Yeah, my understanding of the phrase calls out is if you've got a problem with somebody and you call them out. That's what it means, correct?
No, not here. He comes out and he's on the stage and he says, look, you know, people always say, I can't remember what order this happened in, but he got the Hook out there as well with him, but the Hook symbol. He says, look, people always say, you know, look what happens to anyone Jericho partners up with. They always end up fighting each other. It all ends in tears sort of thing. And Hook's there and he says, but the rules are different at the top, and that's what I'm trying to, just what I'm trying to teach you. He says, I want you to believe in me as much as I believe in you, Hook. And Hook does believe in him, Sidge. So much so that he's got them a match for Collision, but he's going to keep an eye on Jericho.
Do you believe in him or not?
And
do you want to be his tag team partner, or do you not trust him to turn on you at some point? I need an explanation.
And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Who wonder? One of these engagement accounts who kind of infer anything when they say, oh, you know, the AFI stuff.
Yeah.
The CM Punk entrance, even though it was adequately explained. Yeah. I don't get it. Like, you know when they play dumb, which is one of my least favourite things? I'm not playing
it's a
dumb.
Legitimate question.
I'm dumb. Like, what?
And it's like, oh, but interesting. Who are they going to face? And then Shane Taylor Promotions are there, Shane and Lee Moriarty, who we really like. They're a fantastic talented team. But all they do is lose on Collision. And I don't know whoever it was going to be was going to lose to Jericho and Hook, obviously, but...
You know what I thought of as well? Danielson had that incredible match with Shane Taylor.
Yes.
And he didn't really have the aura. Maybe it was just not that great in and of itself. Anyway, Lion Hook, I absolutely hate it. I believe in you, so much so that I've requested a match for us to work on Collision. Or at the same time, yeah, I've still got my eyes in the back of my head, I don't trust you. So if you don't trust him, it's not like it's like I do and I don't at the same time.
But they don't have to be a tag team, he's just mentoring him. You don't have to tag together. He can just be at ringside and watch your matches, arguably. Yeah, he's just mentoring you.
Or better yet, right?
Go on.
With the digital advancements we've made in this life, you can do it remotely.
Yeah.
On holiday.
Or you can mentor him in Japan. That works as well.
Or you could just watch Dynamite at home, text his advice. Don't broadcast the texts.
Oh, good, yeah.
And then don't even mention them by name. And say, someone said I should do this. Oh, good, 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 Hook. I don't understand. I know what they're trying to do. It's like...
Yeah.
They're basically doing Can They Coexist? Wondering if they... They're doing a Can They Coexist storyline. And they are saying, no, we can't. And yes, we can at the same time. What? What a complete waste of my time this is. Go away.
Oh, I was thinking, okay, let's move on with this. This is, you know, clearly not something Sidge likes to talk about. And then I realise what we have next. That's Jay White versus Daddy Ass. Sid was already annoyed by the mere graphic of this popping up on social media before the show.
No, I knew this match was happening well in advance.
Yeah.
Maybe I just suppressed it. So, no good can ever come from a Daddy Ass singles match. Name a good one. Okay, you're not obviously going to get a great match with 60-year-old Daddy Ass.
A man who, I think it was Andrew Dice Clay, I want to give him a shout out. If I've got that wrong, I do apologise. Who said he's a year older than Sheik was when he won the Gimmick Battle Royal.
This is true. He's a much better Nick, evidently.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, has there ever been a good, or at least productive, Daddy Ass singles match? He kicked out with a coffin drop at like 3.1.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, the Loki, he eats these guys alive.
Yeah, and...
I kind of respect that.
I was like, what are we doing with Jay White here? Because he's, you know, been responsible for, in storyline at least, I know all the fans are smart and they know that's not the real reason. But in storyline, he's cost Darby Allin his dream to go and go, you know, have what a year it would have been, you know, win the tag titles, you know, last thing match, and then off I go to Everest and stuff. And he's done all that. And then, you know, they turn on the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass and what have you, and you're like, okay, right. And then Daddy Ass, in my head, the story is Daddy Ass is like, right, I'm not having this. And then Jay White's
you
like,
have it in your head. I don't give it a thought at all.
Well, yeah, I think maybe after this I thought more than I ever would have. But I was like, well, you know, Daddy Ass goes, I'm not having this. You've, you know, attacked my friends, the Acclaimed and what have you. And Jay White's like, I'm Jay White. I'm like half your age. I'm in the best shape of my life.
So's Billy Gunn in his defense, well, yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, let's talk about it, because, you know, Jay White is making his entrance. Daddy Ass jumps him, beats him around ringside, beats him through the crowd. I was joking with Andy about this, saying, I'm watching this match, and for the first 5 minutes, I was watching it going, do they think they're always perpetually in picture? Because they were just slowly, methodically, I'll throw you into the barricade. I'll punch you in the crowd. I'll throw you over the barricade. I'll throw you into the steps. I'll throw you into the apron or whatever. My note here also reads, Jay White makes a comeback for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And also, in the minx, and amongst all this, you see the Acclaimed...
Jay White wrestle, but you don't have to do it in his voice.
You see that the Acclaimed have been jumped backstage. Jay White sets up for the Blade Runner. But that gets countered. And Daddy Ass hits two consecutive Famouses and is there going, guys, you want a third? But instead, he gets out of the ring and gets a chair.
Why? He could have beaten his opponent handily. Yes, I understand. He wants revenge.
Yeah, he gets a chair.
I'm not an idiot.
He comes in, and the guns slide and say, Dad, don't do this. Come on. They beg off, and he shoves one of them away, and he's arguing with the other one. And then Jay White just low-blowed him for a DQ.
What?
And then they beat Billy Gunn down. They're going to kill him with the chair, basically. But the Acclaimed come down. They make the save. The Acclaimed and Daddy Ass take back over. They are going to slam Jay through the announce table, but the guns just get there in time to pull him away from them and get away. And inevitably, they're building to a trios match.
Do it!
Tag match. I think it's at
people thought
is it a supercard?
I don't know. I don't
I feel like
so.
I saw them on the poster, but then I don't know if that's been confirmed. I'll Google that in a second.
Google that if you fancy. I don't give a toss, personally. Where to start with this? I started on Ups and Downs, which you can read at whatculture.com/WWE. And I asked the question, how much merchandise do the Acclaimed sell? Because if it still loads, I just think I'd rather sacrifice that merch money and do something significantly different with every person involved in the storyline, because what on earth are we doing here? Like, the must sell out of a Acclaimed t-shirt, even in that market stall they call a stock room, because they are still on this show despite being ice cold. And the thing about this as well, it was like, you know what this reminded me of? This is two kinds of TNA, this entire thing. So you had the don't come more ex-WWE guy than Daddy Ass. Like, he's ancient. He had his time in the sun years and years ago. Yes, there was a career renaissance. It was 2022 where they started doing that big, we're in love with Daddy Ass at All Out 2022. And even he was taken aback by how over he was. They're still booking him almost as if he's that guy. This is not the first time he's ate someone young, way more in their prime, alive. And maybe that's a low-key thing that more people should be picking up. But this is two kinds of TNA. One, because it's a 60-year-old ex-WWE guy just mopping the floor with an embarrassing someone who's like one of your core, well, should be or yes. could be one of your core guys. And like, even if, and there's a lot of people who believe this, and I flip between the two opinions, even if you don't believe there's true main event money to be made with Jay White, he's still better than this.
Yes.
He is still considered.
Particularly where he's previously been booked in recent weeks.
You know what else is specifically reminded me of was the Rob Van Dam TNA debut.
Mm.
Where it's like, you are getting your ass kicked in a shocking and humiliating fashion, and that's the story. It's just so odd. And on the picture-in-picture stuff, I was in a weird... I've often said, right, I would just like to watch a Dynamite on American time.
Yes.
Rather than do the first thing I wake up, and it takes me a while to wake up, bleary-eyed, coffee. It's not the same as settling down on a night when you're kind of awake and you just... So I'm glad I got that experience, like, at home as well, or my new home for the week. If nothing else, because I always get caught... Because I watch this on Fight, usually. UK, Europe provider... And they often don't go to picture in picture because they are not paying for
yes,
or the you know the adverts aren't paying for or whatever. So you just get the match, whereas on TBS you see picture in picture.
Mm. Sarah Silverman's doing crazy tricks with animals,
and because you don't get that,
that cat shouldn't be driving a car.
And because you don't get that visual of the picture in picture break. There are times when I'm watching on Fight and I'm going, is this in picture in picture?
Yes.
It's really slow. Oh, is this match a bit boring? Then you realise, all right, they do the big camera shot and then it zooms in and Excalibur goes, well, I'm back here on TBS and evidently I've just zoned out. How do I get that experience when I'm literally looking at the picture in picture and I know there's a picture in picture or there'd just be a hard ad break?
Yeah.
It's like, am I watching this? Am I in England?
I'll swear there used to be a period, maybe, you know, obviously... when it was AEW was at its hottest, there was periods where you and I would watch that if we were watching it with a picture-in-picture where you're like, I want to trying to see what's going on there because I don't want to miss a second.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the chair, by the way. That was not me farting. I want to clarify that
quickly.
But in terms of, yeah, that and this is just like, I'm definitely not missing anything. There's been a hard shot of, you know, Billy Gunn's face for 10 seconds there.
Yeah, this would be a terrible finish. And I'm not saying, this is like the pancakes, waffle stuff again. I'm not saying that you can't do any DQ or count out or no contest finishes. However, there is a bad and good version of everything. Like, Jay White does this, refresh my memory, in full view of the ref.
The low blow, 100%, yeah.
So he's either just given up and just thought, I can't beat this guy, right?
Yeah.
Even though people have said, I know Billy Gunn's huge. Powerhouse Hobbs isn't small. Yeah. Lance Archer isn't small. Mm-hmm. And they got defeated. Right, this is the worst kind of everything. This, so you can in fact beat 60-year-old Billy Gunn, who should be lower down than them on the tier of guys. So he's either an idiot and just done it in full view of the referee and not cheated properly. So he's either an idiot or a coward. And I know he's a heel, but you've got to be crafty. You don't want to be a chicken heel at all, and a complete loser who's weak and gets his ass kicked. He's at least two or three of those really bad things. This is absolutely abysmal. And one more thing on that. So they have this mirror story between Ospreay and Danielson. And you're meant to think, all right, okay, well, they're beating the same guy and they're in around the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. They are beating different opponents this week, but of equal stature or, you know, style, equally terrifying in theory. That's just about excuses, those two David versus Goliath matches. And then when I saw Daddy Ass versus Jay White, I went... Not another one. We don't have the soundboard with us.
Sorry.
I'm very sorry. But guess what? I won't be using that on my yed button very much.
Yes.
Maybe they're trying to set my yak button because that's what I bloody
thought. That was it. Jay White when he made his brief comeback. He told Billy Gunn to suck. He was like, I'm not in that.
No.
Straight away took back over.
This was just unspeakably awful on every conceivable level. So much so that it was like, I'm not trying to be fickle. And I'm not saying, oh, the power's gone after one bad week.
No.
But this was very much so baffling, so I can't even begin to, like, think about what you were thinking.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I can understand a boring match that's doesn't quite hit, or, you know, an ambitious angle that doesn't really connect, or works better on paper. This, I'm like, what was the actual goal? Terrible. You must protect daddy ass, apparently. Great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, though, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, we all carry around different stressors. They can be big life worries or just, you know, little things like your favorite wrestler not being used properly. The thing is, when we keep them bottled up, it really can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. It is really helpful too for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. Therapy basically empowers you to be the best version of yourself. So why not give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and best of all, suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/whatculture today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/whatculture.
We needed a bit of cheering up, so we got a beloved... Come on in, Simon Miller, if you want to...
Come on.
Do you want to... No.
I don't think you've ruined anything in your life, Simon.
There he is. We next hear from Willow Nightingale, who's beloved in Worcester, Mass. Of
Worcester,
course.
Mass.
She's got a great history there. She's feeling, in her words, mother fluffing great. She loves Worcester, Mass. They love her. She talks about, you know, growing up there. And promises she is going to be the smiling face of TBS when she takes the championship from Julia Hart at Dynasty. And then she's interrupted by one Mercedes Mane, who says, doesn't matter who it is, whether it's you or Julia. Andy Murray really liked that way that Mercedes said.
It's very good. Yeah. She's very
whoever it is, I've got next at Double or Nothing. Great babyface thing, this, but that's kind of the story they're telling, I suppose.
Is it, or are they blindly walking into an enforced heel turn come Saraya effect? I'm getting Saraya effect here.
You said to me, there's definitely, she's no way she's medically cleared the way that they're doing this.
Well, she's done. I understand there's like, possibly like there's different levels of clearance. It's like Area 51 or whatever. Where you can do this, but as long as you don't bump.
Yes.
We'll clear you to do a little limited physical activity, but not bumping, so who the hell knows. But if she's not cleared, what was the f***ing rush in signing her?
Yes.
It's not as if he was like, I've said this before, but it's not as if Tony Khan in his goddamn life as a promoter has ever scrambled for free agents.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And he's just signed Ospreay and Okada. If anything, it might have been more prudent to space them out. Just didn't get this at all. Willow could not have come off as the most just inordinately likeable babyface yet again. She's got that wholesome, and I know this is me saying it, I'm allowed, dorky quality.
Yeah.
You cannot. You've got no conscience. Have you got no soul if you don't like Willow Nightingale?
Oh, absolutely.
You just don't. So it's already a risk programming Mercedes money against her. So then Mercedes comes out and says, well, whoever wins a Dynasty, who the hell is that going to be? Well, we're going to make some money in Las Vegas because then we're going to wrestle at Double or Nothing. I worked this out, right? There's a little website. It's called, it's for people who can't do mathematics like myself. days between dates.
Right.
So if you want to figure out how many days until from now until here. So from April 3rd, 2024.
Right.
Until I believe May 26, 2024, which is the night of Double or Nothing, the next 53 days of AEW television art. Well, I know what's happening. Like Julia Hart could... Julia. Because I get confused
Julia.
With...
Julia.
Julia. Julia. That's how I'm going to remember it from now on.
He's got it.
Sorry, boys.
Sorry, I just had an insufficient memory, but now it's all working out. 53 days of... Oh, well, I'm just waiting for the inevitable here. I talk about the way they signpost things all of the goddamn time. I'm also sometimes a little bit kind where I realise, right, you're going to have to build the big pay-per-view matches and whatever you do on the television programmes. And the interim is kind of a formality. It's just part of the model.
And sometimes they swerve that Hangman Page, yeah, perfect example.
And it's flawed, but it has to happen this way, I guess. But 53 days of, well, like Julia Hart could cut the promo of her goddamn life this time next week. And in the back of my head, I'm still thinking, you're going to have to graft really hard at Dynasty for me to even conceive of a different outcome. And that is because on night one, they have linked Willow and Mercedes and talked up the ankle injury. You just know the destination. 53 days of, well, I'm just waiting for... I'm not even waiting for the pay-per-view. I'm waiting for the pay-per-view after the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And Mercedes Money just comes out, cuts the most generic one-line promo, and then just the segment ends with her just doing a dance on the ramp. Mm-hmm. CEO. It's like, I kind of get it now. Mm. I have been instructed to do that if I attend an AEW show. And you get the cue before you do it. I was very much let it play out on all of this Mercedes Money thing, because I think everyone... has kind of collectively realised, you know what, this is just there. Mm-hmm. That's a shame. But now I'm going to have to let it play out for, and again, I did the math, the calc and the trig, and it's 53 days of, well, I'm just waiting for the Vegas match now. And if she isn't cleared, if anything, you could have let Ospreay and Okada sink in, let that be a little bit normal, and then save a new surprise. Christ.
Then it was time for the semi-finals of the AW Tag Team Title Tournament.
This I really liked, if you think I'm being a bit moody.
Yeah, this is something that we've sort of anticipated and expected for a long time. And then it was something that we kind of put together of like, well, the Young Bucks will probably win there, and the brackets will go like this.
Yeah.
But I didn't think we hadn't put it together of like, oh my God, if they do it like that, then Sue will be in attendance.
Yeah.
They'll just make everything so much. So it's Young Bucks versus Best Friends to see who goes through to the final of the tag tournament to face either FTR or Top Flight, of course. The Young Bucks gave a shout out to Scapegoat Jack Perry, saying that they love his work on their way to the ring, of course. And they are in control early on. They slam both members of the Best Friends, or the people who are in the match, Orange Cassidy and Trent, obviously, get slammed onto the apron, and they're so much in control that Matthew Jackson can pop over to commentary and show Excalibur how to do his job by throwing to picture in picture. And that's exactly what we do. When we come back, Orange Cassidy finally gets the hot tag. He flies in, big crossbodies to both members of the Young Bucks, but they manage to take back over. They get him down, they do the lazy kicks, they set up for the EVP trigger, but they've taken too long, so they collide their knees together.
I'm not being rude, I need to check the name of someone who has a very salient point. Ooh. About the Young Bucks. So just look at him.
Yes.
Oh, look at the plan. It's very nice.
Lovely. Cassidy makes a comeback when they miss that EVP trigger. He does the tornado DDT. But Matthew Jackson slides in, and it's super kicks for everyone. It's a super kick for Orange Cassidy, a super kick for Trent Bretter, a super kick for Chuck Taylor on the outside, and very nearly, because we said he can't do this, can he? He sets up for him, but says, I'd never do that. Very nearly super kicks Sue, who's
inspired.
Joined.
Inspired.
Really good stuff, this. And he says, oh, guys, I'm a nice guy. I'd never do that. I'm Matthew Jackson. Hey, Sue, you all right? And Sue almost slaps the taster out of his mouth. And then he turns around and gets hit with an orange punch by Orange Cassidy. And they take back over. They set Matthew up for a spike scrunchie. Get a two count, but Nicholas Jackson, apologies, slides in at the last second to break that all up.
Really good there, 2.9 that.
Yeah. And there's been a turnbuckle exposed, I think, out of the break by the Young Bucks. And in the end, Trent gets sent into it and then gets rolled up with the tights, handful of tights as well. 1-2-3, the Young Bucks win, the Young Bucks advance, as we anticipated they would. Let's talk match, and then we'll talk, obviously, about this post-match angle in a second.
We will. Let's talk attire.
Mmm.
I still I like the idea. It's one of those, there's certain things in pro wrestling, there are certain things in like every sort of area of your life where it's like, that sounds like a good idea, .. on paper.
Yes.
Then when it comes down to doing it, you think, oh Christ, this is in some way impractical or it's just not working or whatever. I like how douchey these Young Bucks attires are on paper. It still feels like, and you know, this element of the act works in its favour, it still feels very much like a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Like a fakish thing on TV that's really well done, but it just has the trappings of a upper mid-card thing. This gear, I just cannot get it out of my head.
Mm.
Like, they are wearing, you know when you see those memes of like Daz in like really loose fitting blue jeans and those black school shoes on a night out?
Yeah.
And it looks so bad, but again, it's not meant to look cool.
No.
They are not cool. They are management figures who you're meant to think are supremely uncool, stupid dickheads, mm-hmm. who are trying to be cool. So I understand the levels on which this works, but I still think the gear is constrictive. It just looks a little bit worse. So I was thinking, these guys have been wearing trainers, sneakers.
Mm-hmm.
They are big, avid collectors. They eventually switch to wearing sneakers in the ring in 2021, and they have their best run of their entire life. And I think those two things are connected. They're obviously comfortable.
Yes.
Obviously comfortable. Now it doesn't really fit the gimmick for them to wear sneakers or like tights, which is all a pity because the visual just remains like... Do you get it as well when you watch
100%.
Them?
100%. Yeah.
I'm not being like stupid here.
No, I think... You know, we talked about them looking like Dumb and Dumber when they're like got bright orange suits when they arrive.
That was inspired.
Yeah.
And you should have done hidden meanings behind attire.
They've been doing that for quite some time, and they're doing the whole, hey guys, hey. And I'm convinced there's no one even there that they're waving at. They're just, you know, obviously in their own minds just beloved when, oh, thank God, Nicholas and Matthew are here. But yeah, I agree. I think you pointed it out at the moment you said that. I was like, so yeah, there's just something not off. They're brilliant. And
yes.
They've really rediscovered their form. But yeah, I think you can have that and arguably have them go, right, enough of that. Time to wrestle now. And now we're in.
Well, so I thought, right, okay, I understand why they're doing this. There is a great compromise that was DM'd to me by someone whose name I'll never, ever be able to pronounce, but they are at Essential Ribbon on Twitter, and they basically say they have the same opinion.
Mm-hmm.
As a compromise, they can wear trainers, sneakers again, they can wear the tights of old, but in order to sort of signify we are very middle management, we're all about the team, that kind of
smart cash,
yeah, that kind of aspect of their personality, like, hey, we're EVPs, we're crushing it, we're all for the business, we're here to change the world, guys, have legit sponsors in the most ugly, like,
yes,
you know, the backdrop of a football interview for the Premier League, and yes, you've got every single sponsor,
Pucker Pies, and
have that on their tights where it's like Cracker Barrel,
yeah,
DraftKings, and either new sponsors who they're getting through this,
uh-huh,
or like brands historically associated with AEW, strike up agreements, do more. And it's like, well, we're here to represent the brand, and it would look so obnoxious.
I like that.
But like, it would still look like the Young Bucks, and it wouldn't have this mid-card trapping. I promise I'm going to be a little bit positive now. Maybe it's the manner emanating from Simon Miller walking down these stairs. The positivity is being radiated towards me, and now I can be happy. Now I can finally be positive. Because I thought this match, I've made the point that if you look at February 2020, the summer of 2021,
mm-hmm,
the build to Full Gear 2019, the various peaks AEW has hit as a promotion have had the Elite at the epicenter.
Yes.
And this was that philosophy, but like in microcosm, in that the Young Bucks were the best thing on this show.
Mm-hmm.
They just were. That's not really high praise, but on this night it was no less true. First half of the match before they went to picture in picture, and I thought that was a little bit too meta even for me, who's got a bit of, you know, because how do you know? You know what I mean? Are you calling the shots here? I thought the whole point was, you're not, you just think you are. Whatever. But in the second half, the Sue thing was so inspired. Having her there for the post-match angle, which was probably the best thing on the show.
Yes.
Was really, really inspired. It just felt like such a transgression. Not only is she clearly not a professional wrestler, but just being sort of... It's one of the most inspired AEW ideas ever, if you can get on board with it. And I understand if you can't, but this really wholesome, nice mom how could you possibly super kick her in the face in the mere tease of doing it? We were, honestly, watching Dynamite, just got in, just decompressing, chatting away, not in the normal way that we would have watched it, realistically. No. We've watched certain things back to make sure our thoughts are the same, but the actual experience was chatting, and then it was kind of easy to get a little bit lost during certain matches, especially Daddy Arts versus Jay White. The second that it's so well built as well, because Matthew Jackson's kind of like fizzing around the ring, bang, super kick to Trent, boom, super kick to Cassidy, and then he times it in the exact same way where it's the rule of three.
Yes,
the classic dramatic rule of three, where it's like, don't, yeah, you, so you cannot, you literally cannot do that. So that was great. That inspires Cassie to fire up. You get the Superman punch on the outside, and that's the first of, I would say, about three or four proper 2.99s that they had no right. They had absolutely no right.
It's been off FTR versus the Young Bucks in the final from the moment they announced the tournament.
They could not have signposted it anymore.
Yeah,
it had no right. I'm not saying it was a vintage great Young Bucks TV match, and I don't think they've had one since this attire. The Sting match was completely different. And I'm not saying it's all just the tights, but the new gear, but I kind of get away from it. They still haven't had a 2021 level Bucks match yet. I don't know what the reason is for that, but we'll see. But the last 3 minutes sure felt like it, without being in and of itself a great match. Should we talk about the post-match now?
Yes, because you could sense it coming. It's like the Young Bucks celebrate. They
for months now, Trent's demeanour has been really quite subtly well done.
And you get the moment of, well, this has happened. They're out of the tournament. They're kind of, you know, what on earth would they do next anyway? And yet, you know what? Got to give the people what they want. And then you go back and there's Chuck there and there's Orange there and there's Trent there. And Chuck and Orange... Yeah, Chuck and Orange are all in on the... And Trent takes one step and starts sprinting towards Orange Cassidy. He nails him with the flying knee. Chuck Taylor's face is a picture. He's conflicted. He's upset. And Sue as well. Trent walks past her as he storms out. Sue can't believe it either. Really well expertly worked turn, this, I thought.
I thought this was really, really well done. The highlight of the night. The one thing that stopped all of us in our tracks as we watched it. And Trent's demeanour, as I said, running up. This has been really well done. You could sense it coming, but I didn't call it on this.
No.
And I should have. For the only time on this show, they deftly dovetailed.
Ooh.
I feel a bit, it wasn't quite good enough for that. They deftly dovetailed the split up of the best friends with the Young Bucks advancing. So this tournament has worked as a tournament should, in that it's told subplots as well as the main story of what the final's going to be. So that's, you know, that's all right. That's pretty damn good. Having Sue there was class. That was a really great idea where it just... Look at that poor face. Like, a precious son has done that. It's silly, but it's good silly. It's effective silly. This crowd, not the best all night, but realistically, were they given the best card to energise them? No, this did. And as well, Chuck Taylor, if you're familiar with his heel run on the indies well before Best Friends arrived on the scene in AEW, years and years before, he's a tremendous value as a heel. So funny. And Trent's got that dickhead energy, we've always said it. Best Friends as a heel act could be great.
Yes.
The fact that they have for nearly 5 years, right, been just the wholesome prelim guys who have classic moments but lose more often than not. Like, kind of part of the soul of AEW. It's a pretty bold gambit. Like, Trent's going to reunite with Sue at some point and it's going to be really nice. But for now, it's probably a much needed sense of direction. And good news, yeah. Best Friends as heels is going to be great because Chuck Taylor, right, is a great heel, and Trent, we've said, has got the demeanor. And they're going to be feuding with Orange Cassidy, and I don't know if you've been paying attention for the past 2 years, but he could have a tag team with anybody.
Because he's possibly be
because he's teamed with 1 million babyfaces. Shibata.
It saves time for you to list the people he hasn't.
Shibata? Yes. Hook,
yeah.
Keith Lee and El Hijo del Vikingo, Eddie Kingston,
yeah.
All in London.
Mark Briscoe, is he teamed with Mark Briscoe? Or I just made that up in my head.
No, because Mark Briscoe won't be a tag team. He might have done a trios match.
Yeah.
Jungle Boy was your team with at some point. There's countless. So anyone.
Mm. Let me just check my notes here, Sige, because I believe we've got to the one winning match.
Just one.
Just the one this
just
week.
Just the one.
It was Thunder Rosa versus Mariah May with Toneless Tiny Storm on commentary. Doing a really good job, to be fair. She was commentating whilst Thunder Rosa was chucking around Mariah May early on, but Mariah May came back with a nice hip attack and a drop kick. And I can't remember what she said exactly. I've written another one of her quotes down, but she basically went, well, short night for Mariah May here, because she thought she was going to pin Thunder Rosa straight out the gate off the back of that. But Rosa countered a powerbomb on the outside, took back over, got a bit lippy with Tony Storm, to which Tony replied, piss off, you twerp. I think we went to a break at this point. We came back, and I think it's fair to say these two were laying it in the slap exchange, the forearm exchange, and the suplex exchange. There was some. You said before this match, these two girls know how to suplex people right on the edge of dangerous.
The best angle. Well, the second best angle if you're a sicko.
Mariah May got a two count off a big knee following this big suplex exchange. But in the end, Thunder Rosa hits a backstabber, Tijuana bomb, 1-2-3. She wants the title match right now, but she's going to have to wait till Dynasty to face...
Toneless Tiny Storm.
Toneless Tiny Storm, who sold the... oh, bollocks, she's pinned me, and now she's pinned Mariah May, and now she's the number one contender, and now, oh, God, really well after this match.
Yeah, I mean, this was, again, Kirby inhaled by the commercial break. Not so much eaten, but Kirby inhaled, as all these matches are.
It came back from the break, and we were like... they forgot to turn the audio.
Yeah, I know. Like a rare piss on cat. Match of two halves. The first half being diabolical. There was a bit where, I can't remember who did it, but there was a head scissors takedown attempt.
Mm-hmm.
The bump for which was so bad, it was like, was that reversed but botched? Or was that just a terrible bump where you couldn't even tell what was going on? And even Excalibur had to scramble and say, oh, I don't think that... No. Didn't get all of it.
Yeah.
And then there was a bit as well where Mariah May... was propped up against that disgusting LED barricade. And then Thunder Rosa does like the sort of the splash on the way. It looked piss weak. But then maybe they've realised, hang on, we're having a bit of a mare here. Should we just chop the crap out of each other when we come back? And they did. And the crowd got a bit more into it. And as I said, the bombs were good. This was very much the expected result. Even though they've been building Mariah May, so it wasn't as stunningly predictable. But very much what it needed to be. But then again, the women's division as a whole just needs to be a lot more.
And it's you know, Thunder Rosa never lost this belt. I like the motivation she's got. Like, and then when she was, it's never going to happen. Obviously, there's like 4 minutes left on the show, but she's there. Like, let's have a bare knuckle fight right now, because she wants to get the title back. She never lost, so I think they've built this really well. And I'm looking forward to this match at Dynasty. Before we get to the main event, before we even get to the name of the game. Special US edition. What's the aim of the game, Sige?
The aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute, and second the first time you hear the first note for the first lady's entrance theme ahead of the only match on Dynamite. And it usually falls in that 120 to 125 range. Sometimes they take the piss. But basically, more often than not, it falls just before the main event.
I got a live version of my favourite part of this where... they were doing the thing and we were like, da 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 da, and they often put it as, that's basically the order the show's going to be in. And they said, da-da, and then the contract's signing. And I was like, Sige, here comes, it's you know, 140 or whatever. Here comes Thunder Rosa and Mariah May. Any idea what the plan is? And you said the line that you always say, which is the you've jingleized this.
Yep.
In terms of how to know the structure of the women's match on the entire Dynamite card.
And I do jingleize it just to underscore, embolden, italicize.
Yeah.
Just the thought process behind this. Oh, we kind of have to do it now. 2024, can't get away with anything these days. That is the mentality and the inner sanctum of AEW Creative. And I jingleize this mentality, not ours, it's theirs. When the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. And that's the aim of the game, of course. And the name of the game is... Lady's name. Lady's name. One day, my children will see this.
Shout out to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Blair, at Adam Wilton 4, and Jose Palomares at the Whole 11, the guys who often take care of the
data.
This sort of thing, thank you very much. We didn't really need them. We did a live.
Oh,
it's 1:42, yeah. Basically.
We don't need you guys.
It was just for fun this
thanks
week.
Thanks for your tireless effort.
Yes, thank you for doing this at like 3 a.m, although he was up because he's probably right now in the air flying to America for WrestleMania. But more importantly, he's flying for WrestleMania, It's Always Sunny at What Culture, our live show that goes down on day two of WrestleMania, lunchtime on day two ahead of night two. We are the meat in your WrestleMania sandwich. And if you're listening to this, don't mess about. They are, I think, six, seven tickets left to our live show. And that was the last time we checked. So, Lord
knows.
Put it
this way, by the time the next person climbs the rocky steps, this sucker could be sold out. Mm.
WhatCulture.com/tickets if you want to join us for that one. And yeah, safe travels to Adam Blair, who's on his way over here right now for that. And I suppose WrestleMania XL and all that. Anyway, main event time. The contract signing.
This is a relief on this show.
The contract signing for Samoa Joe and Swerve. The go ham angle for Samoa Joe.
Go ham.
Oh,
man. What's that?
It's just weird, this, because they do know they've got 2 more weeks of television for this, don't they?
Yeah.
But there was a line that will live in infamy on this, because Swerve comes out, Joe comes out, we go, I guess they're doing an overrun then. And, Swerve, Joe says, has received bad information. He talks about the fact that he's, you know, had this fairy tale run to become world champion, but that's just not going to happen. He's going to beat him. He's going to smash him. He's going to beat
me.
He said, I'm going to swerve. I'm going to beat you so bad you will be mentally scarred, like you left P. Diddy's party too late. That's exactly the reaction.
That got the Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Swerve fires back that he's dreamt about this moment all of his life. They're building a dynasty in AEW. Joe is the definition of a killer, he admits, but so is Swerve. At Dynasty, he's going to show him that he's every bit of that man. Whose house? Swerve's house. Run the fade on that, bitch, says Swerve. And they brawl. Swerve gets the chain that he's wearing around his neck, and he tries to choke Joe out with that. But Joe fires back with a headbutt.
That was tits.
Yeah, they fight a bit more. Joe takes over. Joe gets the chain that Swerve just tried to choke him with, wraps it around his fist, and just batters him. Bloody Swerve up in the corner, leaves him laying. He's pissing blood out of his forehead, and Joe thinks, job done. Swerve might not even make it to Dynasty. He begins to walk up the ramp, and then Swerve, with blood dripping off his head, grabs a microphone and says, I love this sh. That's all you've got? If that's all you've got, then I'm taking the championship from you. And he gets the pen on the contract that Joe's already signed, and he rubs it in the blood that's pouring down his forehead, and he signs the contract, and he smears his blood all over it. And Joe looks stunned by all this, and then comes down. Again, Swerve almost offers himself of like, come on then, hit me with your best shot. And Joe picks him up and slams him through the table and stands tall to close out this show. Like I said, it felt like the go-home angle days before the pay-per-view. We've still got another 2 weeks here, but yeah, I'm really excited to see these two again.
Yeah, I'm quite excited to see these two again. I don't know, it just feels like, with this as your key storyline, in front of that crowd, that atmosphere, the sentiment surrounding a company that I think other than this episode, it has been critically acclaimed again, but it's still just not hot. It's just still not that hot. And I think that, I know it just felt like, if you're doing the big blood angle and the headbutts and the like, it just felt a little bit corny to me, especially Swerve doing the whole, I loved it.
Yeah.
It's like, that worked so well, given the level of violence when he was like stapling himself in the match. Without that feeling conjured during Texas Death, for me, it just came off a little bit corny.
Okay.
The Joe line accomplished what I needed to do. Swerve in response. Previously, in the Swerve Strickland versus Samoa Joe feud, we've come up with this thing.
Yeah.
Where every single wrestling promo volley between two wrestlers is essentially, previously in this feud, previously on my character arc, where it's like they just regurgitate the same premise and exposition every... You know, speaking of Hook last week, and I said I wanted to be as mental. Just, I've seen it. Wrestling dialogue fundamentally needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
I hate it so much. It's not really... It can't advance. just kind of stories can't advance if you're just doing the same plot beat or the same character motivation and just repeating it over and over again. So away from the blood, away from the visual, it didn't really advance anything. It was fine, I guess. But I did feel go home stuff. So maybe we should take assurance from the fact that they've still got weeks of worth of ideas left. But then again, certain reports have been to be believed. Nobody knows what they're doing 1 week to the next. Yes. I don't know. I do not know. All I know is this took a wild swing with blood, the whole badass posturing. Took a wild swing, and if you take a swing that wild, you really have to hit it. Mm. I don't think they hit it that much now. It's just I just thought it was a little bit cornball.
Mm. Just an overall sort of a show with elements of good intentions. It just didn't hit the heights we were hoping for.
Good intentions.
Expecting.
What was a good intention with JY?
Yeah, some matches had good intentions.
Just baffling. The good wasn't great enough.
Mm. Well, let us know your thoughts on AEW Dynamite in the comment section below or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. You can follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE.
A brilliant tripod. I was talking about the inanimate object.
He's got feelings.
But yeah, let us know your thoughts on everything, as I said, and make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, and check out the What Culture Wrestling YouTube channel, of course, for heaps of WrestleMania content, because we are here in Philadelphia now. But for now, it's been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.